This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting WBHM in Birmingham, Alabama. About one in four U.S. households has a smart speaker, and it's easy to see why. Smart speakers can tell you the weather, they can look up obscure facts, they can even read your kids a bedtime story, all in a voice that sounds increasingly lifelike. But just because they can read your kids a bedtime story doesn't necessarily mean you want them to. And it doesn't mean your kids do either. How are these devices shaping family dynamics, for better or for worse? How concerned should we be about technology that listens to our every word and the words of our children? And at what point does a complicated device intended to make life simpler just make life more complicated? Quick warning, before we go any farther, in this hour we will be saying the name of Amazon's smart speaker. You know, the one that starts with A and ends with A and has Lex in the middle. So, if you're listening to 1A within earshot of an Amazon smart speaker, press the mute button on it right now. Otherwise, it is going to bug you like crazy. We also might reference other smart speakers, but we will try to avoid saying the phrases that wake them up. No promises, though. Joining us from KUOW in Seattle is reporter Joshua McNichols. He is a co-host of Primed, a podcast about how Amazon is shaping our lives. Season 3 of Primed launched last month. Joshua, welcome back to 1A.
Hey, thanks.
Also with us from KUOW is Josh Sherman, the director of the Kid and Family Division at Amazon. Josh, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And also at KUOW is Jason Yip, an assistant professor of digital youth at the University of Washington's Information School. Professor Yip, glad to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
And by the way, Professor, thank you for being named Jason. That's going to make my life a lot easier this hour. We'll be focusing on Amazon smart speaker, but we would love to hear from you if you have any smart speaker device in your home. What role does it play? How is it shaping the family dynamic? Maybe you've chosen not to have a smart speaker in your home. Why not? Email us, 1A@WAMU.org. Comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us at 1A. And again, fair warning, we will be saying the names of these devices. So you might want to press the mute button on your Echo or your Echo Dot right now if you do not want me waking it up. Professor Yip, let's begin with a basic definition. What is a smart speaker?
Well, typically, smart speakers, from what we're looking at right now, oftentimes respond to voice or respond to different patterns in speech. And one of the typical things about smart speakers we're looking at now is the back end. So while there's this like neat front end, you know, there's the lights and the small form factor, it's really the back end that's really important to think about now. Where is it connecting to? What data gets transmitted? And the kind of artificial intelligence or machine learning that's kind of now behind the wheel, as we say.
Well, but before we get to any of that, Professor, just to be clear on the definition, we're basically talking about the computer from the enterprise. You speak a command, it understands what you said, and it gives you an answer.
That's one way of looking at it. Yeah, you can totally do that. And, you know, you can also think about it like, where is it also now these days? Is it on your phone? Is it on your computer or laptop with these sort of other commands that you say? But, yeah, typically what you just said, exactly.
Who's leading the way, Professor, in terms of the most popular models or popular apps right now?
And these days, what we're seeing is Amazon. You know, most of the times we've talked about it, our studies go into that. Google Home tends to be very popular as well. We've seen sort of those two as being the big players when we talk to folks. I think Apple Siri is a little more complicated, depending on perspectives of how that device is answering questions or the kinds of machine intelligence that's built in comparatively to these sort of bigger companies in which search is a really big portion of their work.
Josh Sherman, you've been involved in developing Amazon smart speaker, the Echo Dot, to have a version that's more appropriate for families. Talk about some of the things that the Echo Dot and the digital assistant, I'm going to say the name, I hope you've pressed the mute button by now, Alexa, can do for parents and kids that's maybe different than the Echo Dot you would buy if you did not have children.
Thanks. We start with thinking about what our parents and children they're asking for. And so we looked at what the normal Echo Dot will do, and that's playing music and checking the weather and you know, helping you with the shopping list and timers and alarms and so many other things. And we focused on the ones that kids and parents want. And so with music, we go out and we try and make that more family friendly by blocking explicit lyrics. We do have stories that Alexa can tell to children. And then we have skills as well. So a skill is like an app for Alexa. And so those could be choose your own adventures or games or trivia. And then the last thing that I'll go ahead and mention is that kids love to ask why or what. They're trying to understand the world around them. And so you want to be able to approach them where they are when you answer those questions. So a child might ask, what's thunder? And you want to give an answer that's in vocabulary that they can understand, that makes sense to them. But that is also answering that question. And so we go ahead and curate answers for kids to meet them where they are.
So if a child asked, you know, Alexa, what is thunder? The answer wouldn't be something like thunder is the transmission of electricity from clouds in the ionosphere down to the lower atmosphere.
Exactly.
You have to figure out a way to say it that's a little more Sesame Street.
Absolutely.
Joshua McNichols, this season of Primed is all about Alexa. In episode one, you examined the role that it plays in families' lives. And yes, I said it. I refuse to refer to Alexa as a she. You examine the role that Alexa plays in families' lives, including yours. And in part of the episode, you have an Echo Dot at the dinner table with your wife and kids. Here is part of how that went from episode one of season three of Primed.
Welcome to How Was Your Day, Kids?
What?
Would you like to start? If so, say yes.
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 If you didn't care at all what people thought of you, what clothes would you wear?
Ooh.
If you'd
Ooh.
Like another topic, say next.
Honestly, I would wear what I'm wearing now, including a skirt.
Oh, that's good.
Because I really actually don't care. I mean, I probably care a little bit, but I actually don't care a lot like a lot of people do.
Every night after that, we tried something else.
Alexa, announce that dinner is ready.
Announcing.
Dinner is ready.
We tried Alexa skills that address things that we sometimes struggle with as parents at the dinner table.
Alexa, tell my kids to eat their food.
You need to eat your food.
Fine.
Nom.
I don't understand why that's necessary.
Yeah, you can just tell them yourself.
Joshua McNichols, what was that like having Alexa at the dinner table? That must have felt a little bit strange.
It was. It's funny. It's fun on the one hand because it shakes things up, right? We've all had conversations with our parents or our kids where you try to engage them and they're just like, you're like, how was my day? And the kids are, how was your day? And the kids are like, oh yeah, it was fine. Right. They're not coming out of their shells. And so inviting Alexa into the conversation, it was something new and they were sort of waking up. On the other hand, my wife just found this extra voice that is sort of constantly thinking that it's hearing the wake word when we're not actually saying it, to be kind of disruptive and a little confusing. So in the end, Alexa inspired us to maybe change the way that we were having conversations, but we didn't necessarily feel like it was a technology we needed to have at the dinner table going forward after this experiment.
Did you have an Echo Dot in your home before this experiment?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, as somebody who's reporting on Amazon technology a lot, I've been buying a lot of stuff to put around the house. And, you know, we're using it as our music system now. We have one in the bathroom. And I've got this little program set up called a routine where it plays one song when it's my son's turn to use the bathroom, and it plays a different song when it's my daughter's turn to use the bathroom. So it's solved the traffic jam and the sort of, you know, lack of sense of time that kids have when they're getting ready for school. Now they know, like, when this song plays, oh, like, I got to be doing this now.
It's funny you mention that because a number of our listeners have talked about some of those practical uses. Goldie tweeted, "We recently used Amazon Echo for our kids' alarm clocks. We can set alarms for them via the Alexa app or drop in via video to their room at any time. We find this is a lifesaver since we leave for work before they get up and have had a few incidents where they've slept through the alarm." Joshua, what are some of the other ways that you found that families are using smart speakers to kind of help do the parent thing?
Well, to help do the parent thing. It's a good question. Like, what do you mean by that? Because on the one hand, there's things that kids are doing themselves, right? That they're self-directing, they're asking questions about topics that they're just intensely interested in, and maybe a parent doesn't quite have the patience to keep answering questions about dinosaurs like over and over again, right? And they can ask Alexa that as many times as they want, and she'll keep giving them good information. On the other hand, there's some other things that that kids might ask a smart speaker to do, like read a story, a bedtime story. And, you know, there's questions about, like, does that mean that parents might ease off a little bit from doing some of these things that that traditionally parents did, which would not be a good thing. So it's a there's a wide variety of ways that kids use it. And oftentimes it's more creative than the way that adults use smart speakers.
A number of you have a number of reasons either for having or not having a smart speaker. One particular reason came up several times. Thwarted Extrovert tweeted, "We choose not to use Alexa for two reasons. One, we don't need anyone listening in on us saying, 'Please don't lick your sister.' And two, hearing Baby Shark requested by my preschooler 50 times a day is not conducive to parental sanity." Totally understand reason number two. But reason number one is what we want to focus on. And we'll do that when we continue with KUOW's Joshua McNichols, Josh Sherman, the director of Amazon's Kid and Family Division, and assistant professor Jason Yip of the University of Washington's Information School. We'll talk about digital privacy and young people with smart speakers. We welcome more of your stories as well. 1A@WAMU.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. And you are listening in to 1A from WAMU and NPR. They don't believe it, but you won't let those robots defeat me. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Birmingham. We're discussing parenting in the age of the smart speaker with Joshua McNichols, a host of the KUOW podcast Primed, Josh Sherman, the director of Amazon's Kid and Family Division, and Jason Yip, an assistant professor of digital youth at the University of Washington's Information School. We'd love your questions and thoughts about having smart speakers in your home and around your children and your family. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. And remember, we will be using the names of these devices, so if you do not want me to wake up your Amazon Echo, mute it right now. Emily wrote on our Facebook page, "I have two kids, 7 and 4, and I'm also a foster parent. We have a setting turned on our Amazon Echo that does not allow any explicit music to be played. But really, the biggest problem we've had is my youngest wanting to hear Baby Shark in the middle of dinner, and my oldest trying to play Christmas music in the middle of the summer." Josh Sherman, first of all, I ain't got nothing against Baby Shark. It was the victory song for the Washington Nationals, and we won the World Series, so there's that. But what about that? I mean, Alexa kind of answers everybody's voice equally. What can parents do in terms of those kinds of parental controls? Can you set it so that sometimes it listens to your kids and sometimes it listens to the grown-ups?
That's a really interesting idea. When we created the Kids Edition Echo, we did create parental controls. There are controls so that your kids can't be talking to Alexa past their bedtime. You can also pause the device if you want to have it turned off for dinner time or for homework time. Today, we don't do any recognition of a particular child's voice. And so that you are right, a child has the ability to reach in there. But that's why we built, I mean, that's just one more reason why we built the mute button. If you're having dinner time, maybe you want to mute the device if you find that your child is going for Baby Shark. I personally love the fact that children are able to be independent and they are able to express that independence at such a young age. I think it's a very human thing and natural thing. So,
Josh, what made Amazon decide to develop a kid-friendly version of the Echo?
We heard from customers that they wanted it, honestly. We had a kid's tablet that we built in response to having a tablet and people saying, "Hey, what about my kid?" We had Alexa. People were asking us about how to handle questions like in the problems that I mentioned earlier around like making sure that their kids didn't talk to it late at night or getting answers that didn't make sense to them. And so we responded to those customer requests, and we thought about both the child's wants and needs to have fun and have a device that's approachable for them, but also the parent side of things, because, you know, parents want their kids to go to bed at night and do their homework and maybe clean up the house. And so we actually also created some features so that parents could do that. We have a routine at my house. You can set a little timer and some music, and then that's our tidy up the upstairs routine. And it's a little bit more fun than me just standing at my son and going, pick up your Legos.
Who did you turn to, Josh, in terms of educational consultation? I mean, the way that we speak to young minds, to these little sponges, is very important, and it has to be done just right. How did Amazon figure out the right way to verbalize responses to children? Were there educational consultants?
We talked to a variety of experts in child development and behavioral aspects. Absolutely. We wanted to make sure we got this right. We also have a habit of bringing in parents and children as part of our research so they can see prototypes of how we're building or thinking about building the product and the experience, and then give us feedback so that we can always tune and make sure that we're getting it right.
Yeah, Professor Yip, to that point, you've worked with children and studied how they feel about smart speakers. What do kids perceive about these machines? Do they understand that it's a computer? Do they get that it's not a real person? Like, what are the takeaways?
Yeah, a lot of our work right now in working really closely with children is that there is a sense that right now at this point in time, it is a computer. They don't really quite talk about it in terms of a personal relationship. They talk about it in terms of like transactions. Like, I ask this, I get this. So there isn't yet this socialness about Alexa devices or these digital assistants. So, but you know, there could be at some point where it makes that shift, and that's kind of the bigger question now. Of, you know, if I'm inviting Alexa devices to the dinner table, what kind of conversations will I have? And all of a sudden, now my device itself is having these kind of conversations, and it becomes social. So where along that line is that jump going to be made is a big question right now. And right now at this point, yeah, kids seem to know that this is a device. It has limitations. They've definitely tested out and pushed the bounds of limit. I've seen questions that are mind-boggling. So, and they
like
know
what?
That sometimes. One of the questions is one of our kids in our study asked this question, like, Alexa, will you kill me in my sleep, right? This sort of like, oh, why are you asking?
Wait,
like,
what? The question? Say that again.
It's this question about, you know, whether or not these devices have morality or ethics or these kind of things. We work really close with kids, and we ask them, like, you know, what are some of the questions that, like, you have? You know, and, you know, one of our kids said, like, you know, it's strange when I ask some of these devices these moral questions, like, will you kill me I sleep? And the answer is either, like, I don't know, or... Can you,
oh my
know,
God.
Maybe it's a very, because it's so
maybe.
They know that, not maybe in the sense of like,
I
oh,
don't
I'm
know.
To...
Have you done your homework today? What? Josh yeah, Sherman, it, could you respond to that, please?
Kids are very imaginative, and then they are definitely trying to explore the world around them. We certainly would never conceive to answer that question without a kid. Without having heard that it was even crossed their mind. The kind of questions that we hear are very different, like, what's a unicorn's favorite food, or, you know, I don't know. There's just crazy, fun, imaginative kind of questions, or they're hard questions about the world. Thunder, what's a black hole, why is the sky blue, those kinds of things. It's interesting to hear that kids have these questions, and they're pushing the boundaries. I think it's important that we remember that we're building tools and products for parents and families. And I think parents, we're not trying to replace the parent here in any way, shape, or form. I think it's important that parents continue to play a role with their children and talk about these fears.
Yeah. And I should note, we did hear from quite a few of you who use your digital devices for very different reasons than asking about the safety of whether this device will turn HAL 2000 in your sleep. Here's a quick mashup of what some of you have said you use your smart speakers for that you left in our inbox.
My name is Britt. I'm calling from Salt Lake City, Utah.
May, and I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Anita from Alexandria, Virginia.
I'm calling to talk about how my kids, ages 5 and 8, use Alexa. I use the Alexa every day, from grocery shopping lists to everything as a mom of a young baby. It's been incredible. Controlling our smart lights, the sleep and relaxation sounds, telling us the time, the weather. They have a lot of fun with Alexa. They ask her to tell them kids jokes. They ask her to fart, which she does. They can listen to podcasts. They can use her like an encyclopedia to ask her facts. And she'll also play their favorite song if they can ask it correctly.
What I love most about it is that it connects us to our past and future and things that we can share with our child. So music that's on my mind, I can share with him and have a little dance party.
Well, thank you all for sharing your stories about how you use these devices. We welcome more of them. We are getting absolutely flooded by comments, but if you've got more questions or thoughts, please do keep them coming. Joshua McNichols, I did want to play one more clip from Prime that kind of gets to some of the concerns about these voice assistants becoming part of the family. Here's a clip of Corinna Sullivan, who is a mother of three, talking about her family's relationship with their Amazon Echo Dot.
I tell all three of my children that Alexa is a robot and that people have spent a long time putting information into a box, and that's where she gets her information.
On a recent evening, her family used Alexa 40 times in the 6 hours before bed. She knows because you can check that in the Alexa app.
They must be using Alexa to get the kids to brush their teeth and feed the dog, and I don't even know what else. That's a lot of Alexa.
But here's the funny part.
My youngest child's first full sentence was directed not at me, but at my Echo Dot.
What was that sentence?
It was, Wexa my nato.
What's that mean?
Well, it took a while to figure it out, but he demanded at our dot, Wexa my nato. We found out that his nay is his toy pony. And so he was asking where he had misplaced his toy pony.
And what did Alexa say?
Well, she didn't actually pick up on his vocal cues. And so that provided some frustration for him.
Joshua, that's a funny story, but did other parents share these kinds of concerns?
Well, I didn't necessarily hear concern in her voice. She just thought it was sort of cute. But definitely there is this there are a lot of larger questions floating around that we heard asking about what it means to raise a kid with this virtual assistant at their beck and call. You know, what does it mean for kids to be able to boss this thing around, or should we be saying please and thank you to it? You know, there's a lot of questions about what is the proper way for us to interact with a robot and to train our kids to do that. And one thing we found is that there is not a lot of research on these questions yet because the technology is so new. It's sort of way ahead of the science. But, you know, we're just starting to see this trickle of new science that begins to address some of those questions.
Yeah, kind of to the point you're just making, Joshua, that's what some of our listeners are referring to. Man in the Attic tweeted, the first Model T production was in 1908. It revolutionized the way we move about the world and how we interact with it. Smart speakers most likely will have the same effect. We are just learning how now and sorting out what we want from it. To that end, Josh, I'd like to talk about one of the big reasons why a lot of people have chosen not to bring smart speakers of any kind, not just the Echo Dot, into their home. This is what Jeff had to say.
This is Jeff calling from Pepper Pike, Ohio. There isn't enough money, literally, to pay us to have a smart speaker in our home. As we all know, corporations are in the business of collecting more and more data on us, which they do quite successfully with all our so-called smart devices. Witness Facebook. So, we're not about to give away the few secrets we have left so that someone can monetize them.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Richard tweeted, I'm in computer and network security. The technical term for someone who has a networked microphone and camera in their home is under constant surveillance, which can be compromised, subpoenaed, or leaked, even if it is convenient to ask the fridge if we've run out of eggs. Josh, how do you respond to the concerns that just having this technology that increasingly knows more and more about us can feel a little creepy around our kids?
we take privacy very seriously at Amazon. We built our products from the ground up with that in mind. And I think it's reasonable for, you know, grownups to make decisions around what they bring around into their house. But we try and solve those concerns by being very thoughtful about that. The hardware itself has the mute button. You've mentioned that a few times. That powers off the microphone when it's pressed, and there's a red ring around the screen, around the device, so you know that it's muted. You have a visual cue that it's that way, and you're in control. And then Alexa's only listening for that wake word. And when it hears it, another light will go blue, so you know that you're now actually have Alexa's attention, and what you're saying is going to be acted on. So we try very hard to make that very visually apparent to users. And then finally,
back up one second. I want to make sure I understood what you just said. So you push the mute button, and Alexa stops listening.
100%.
Until you say Alexa again, and
no,
then it starts
you
listening.
Press the mute button, and until you press it again, Alexa won't respond to anything. It's not listening to anything. You powered off the microphone. Yeah.
Thank you. I don't think you quite said it exactly that way before. I just wanted to give you a chance to clarify.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And then when the mute button is off, if you say the Alexa wake word, then you get another signal, the blue indicator that it's actually listening and will act upon your request. So with that hardware, you are in control of what's when you're being listened to, and when you're not. And even when the mute button's not powered, if you're not saying the wake word, then Alexa's not actually doing anything or listening. You also have the ability in the Alexa app to review everything that is every command that you do give to Alexa. You can delete any of those. You can delete any of those for a given day. And we just announced the ability to have a setting. There's a setting now you can have it auto-delete every 3 or 18 months so that you don't have to go back in and manage that if you don't want to.
There are a number of concerns about how close to let a device like an Alexa to people's children. There was a lawsuit filed in Seattle back in June that claimed that Amazon was illegally recording children's voices and making this big database. Apple's Siri automatically deletes recording after the task. I wonder how you view some of these concerns, the suits, particularly because, as I understand it, you are a father and you have an Echo Dot in the home too.
Well, we take that very seriously, and we are getting consent from parents as it relates to the Child Online Privacy Protection Act for our kids' edition Echoes. And we believe that parents should have the right to review what their children are saying, and so they can have awareness of what's being said, and they can be the right parents that they need to be. And again, they can delete those if they wish.
Explain that in terms of consent. I'm sure there are people who just heard you say that and said, nobody asked me to sign anything. I just plugged it in and it started working.
The Kids Edition Echo is much more involved. It has many more steps that are involved in terms of parents, like providing their consent to their children using the device.
Professor Yip, in fairness to companies like Amazon and Apple and Google, we kind of asked for this. I mean, the same generation that's raising kids right now was probably watching the very first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, Encounter at Farpoint, where Commander Riker learned how the computer on the new Enterprise worked. So we went from saying, oh my God, I want that, to saying, oh my God, I have that. What happened?
I think what happened was sort of, you know, asking the question of, like, you know, the genie out of the bottle. You know, we use science fiction oftentimes to imagine the world, like, that's the way I want the world to look like, when in reality the world is really messy. Like, it's very complex. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, we might have looked at Star Trek and been like, well, they had a single mission to explore the universe, and I want to use my voice assistant computer to explore the universe. It was just a singular goal in science fiction, whereas reality is just really complicated and messy. And once you start to introduce perhaps things that are simple in a complex world, then all of a sudden, like, things start to shift and change.
David emailed, the conversation about smart speakers shows that humans are becoming lazy. Why would a parent allow AI to raise their children? We are becoming dumber and dumber. How can you depend on the information provided through the device? That's a harsh question, David, but it is an intriguing one. What does our reliance on smart speakers say about us as parents? Stay close. What's there? Back now to our conversation with KUOW's Joshua McNichols, Josh Sherman of Amazon, and Jason Yip of the University of Washington. Professor, I'd like you to respond to a comment from Stuart, who emailed something that a lot of people have pointed out. Stuart writes, "These are not just the devices one places around the home. They are in our phones. I was recently having lunch with my daughter and discussing her engagement. The phone was off and just sitting on the table. It spontaneously began to show advertisements for engagement rings. Our phones are listening to us whether they are on or not." Professor, to what extent are the kids you've worked with aware of any of these privacy concerns?
Yeah, they're actually surprisingly aware. We work in something called Kids Team, which is a group of children that come to the University of Washington twice a week to co-design with us. So we've developed like a really strong relationship with them. And when we talk with them, like they know a lot. Now again, they're in Seattle, so sometimes they're in a tech hub. It seems to be quite big in this case. But in general, so there is this sort of far sort of like they know what's going on. They sometimes even say things like companies are watching us. But at the other hand, they also aren't aware of a lot of things. And sometimes what we find is that front end of what's shown up is what they look at, but the kids sort of forget that there's like the back end, or they don't realize that there is a back end to some of these things. And that's where it gets sort of complicated and tricky when we start setting like what we call creepy technologies or things that are defining what creepiness means to people.
With regards to that, Joshua, we heard from a caller we played just a bit ago and from some of our other listeners about the kind of profit motive and having their personal data used to make money. How concerned were the parents you spoke to that their information, their kids' information, was becoming grist for a capitalistic mill?
Yeah, that is definitely a concern that a lot of parents have. They assume Amazon is trying to sell us stuff, and so take that view that, you know, and honestly, we don't know a lot about how the information is going to be used in the long run. We know that on the one hand, Alexa listens and learns from the commands that we give. And then when commands don't work, learns from those too, you know, so that they can try to make Alexa more responsive. We know that's part of what makes Alexa better and better. But on the other hand, like what other, you know, Amazon is a big company with lots of different functions. It also takes a long-term view about, you know, these kids might be future customers someday. You know, when we were talking, Josh, about that, you said, well, you know, we wouldn't mind if they became customers, but you're not thinking about that at the very beginning. And you can kind of afford to have this really long-term view because Amazon's going to be around when these kids grow up.
Josh Sherman, I would like you to respond to that, but I kind of wonder if, and correct me if I'm wrong, I kind of wonder if that's the wrong approach. I wonder if it makes more sense for Amazon to just lean into the fact that you're using data to sell us products, kind of like Disney. Disney has made no bones about the fact that it is marketing to your kids. It wants your kids to watch its movies, watch its TV shows, buy its merchandise, and ride its theme park rides. But it says, yes, we're marketing to your kids, we're marketing to your family, and we will be the best steward of your children's time and attention and their sensitivities and their sensibilities of anyone else. We will build our business on being the most trustworthy space for your kids. Why not do that with Amazon? Just admit, yeah, we need your data, and we will be amazing stewards of it.
Well, again, we listened to our customers, and they told us they don't want us advertising to their children. And so we actually set about to build a product that doesn't do that.
Not advertising. Data. You're still collecting data through those devices.
Well, I guess my question is, first of all, children can't buy anything through Amazon systems. They're just not able to. They don't have a credit card. They don't have an account. We don't allow them to do those things. We actually build safeguards to prevent them from doing those. And if a child wants to listen to music and their parent wants to share a subscription to music, we want to give that ability to the parent so that the child can listen to the song. We would never ask the child to buy that. And I don't think that that's going to – we're just – serving up that request, we're answering that need that a customer's had to listen to Baby Shark or maybe something a bit more engaging, and that's how we approach things.
I think we might be talking past one another. I hear you in terms of not buying products. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But even the data about the questions that a child asks goes into a database, which say that the Alexa system doesn't know how to answer it. It then learns how to answer it, which makes it more useful, which makes it more marketable, which helps you sell more Echo Dots, which helps Amazon make money. Data makes you money.
Well, what are the questions?
And there's no crime in that. But
no,
like,
I try.
That's the crime, that's the crime of the realm.
I am not trying to dispute that. We're trying to make our products better, and we're trying to make sure that we can answer those questions, and that if for an adult, you could be able to help them find the next thing that they want to buy. But if a child is asking a question about unicorns or rainbows or why is the sky blue, I don't know how that comes back to a transaction at any – I just don't see it personally. We don't think about it. We don't approach things that way at all.
Professor Yip, on the flip side of this, I wonder how much of that is on parents to be aware of this. I understand that parents are some parents are very concerned about this, about the nature of digital data. But on one hand, they'll point to something like Amazon's Echo Dot because it's something they can see and say, "Oh, see, that device is collecting my data," and yet they let their kids have Facebook accounts and be on Instagram. Yeah. Which is collecting way more data.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that. Like, you know, when we set out to study creepiness and, like, what it meant for families and children, we found that, like, you know, parents are mediators between the technology and the fears that children have. And oftentimes children, you know, they learn through what we call vicarious learning, that they don't have to be exposed to the fear. They just learn it from their parents. And so, or vice versa, they learn the positive things from their parents as well. So when we ask children, like, you know, are smartphones creepy? You know, and one of them said, no. And we asked why. And they said, like, well, my parents use it all the time. Of course, it can't be creepy. My parents use it all the time. So in one sense, you see, like, you know, the same thing with these devices, like voice assistants. Like, if I'm using it all the time, it can't be. But then on the other hand, we asked another child the same question, like, you know, are these sort of consumer devices creepy? And one of the kids said, like, well, yeah, totally. And we asked him why. And he said, like, well, it's because, like, my parents put, like, a little sticker on front of the laptop camera. And we asked, oh, like, why do you think your parents did that? And he said, well, it's to keep the robbers out, of course. And so, you know, and so in the same, you know, consumer device, we would say, you know, so kids are learning. They learn a lot from, like, how parents are using devices. And that's why in our studies, you know, we totally encourage conversations, like, you know, just, you know, looking at things. And one of the reasons why we did the creepy study was it's kind of an odd question to ask kids as a parent. Like, do you think our devices are creepy? And rather, it's a lot easier to ask more specific kinds of questions like, hey, what do you think about a relationship with this device? You know, is it helping or hurting our relationship? Where do you think our data goes? Or where do you think, what do you think is unpredictable? Like, what's this device? Like, can we control it? What do you think? And I think those are the kinds of questions that parents can ask their kids rather than say, like, oh, it's evil or it's good. But rather nuanced questions that really get to the heart of what it is to be a parent and working with your children.
Joshua McNichols, what about the parents you talk to? I can imagine that whether or not the Echo Dot is a convenient boogeyman for the much larger data issues that we have that we still haven't wrapped our heads around, as a parent, I imagine there are plenty who just feel kind of caught in the middle of this sea change that they're just getting swept away by, and they're just trying to do their best every day to raise good kids.
Yeah, and I think a lot of parents have a little bit of sort of a technological PTSD related to just having gone through this thing with phones, where they've sort of seen phones and how they've transformed how their kids act and how sometimes phones can lead us to withdraw. And sometimes parents are just placing those same fears on smart speaker technology when it comes along and thinking, like, is this going to be the same thing? But there are actually a lot of differences between how we interact with phones and how we interact with smart speakers. I mean, You don't scroll endlessly through Reddit on an Alexa device. It's just not something you can do. Because it's in the voice realm, your interactions are more sort of curtailed and are more sort of in the public realm of the house, you know, the voiceosphere or whatever. There's some concern there among parents, but we're still sort of figuring out how rational those concerns are as this technology is so new.
I do want to note that a lot of you have sent us stories about using these devices, and they were tremendously helpful. Christine emailed, "When my grandson was young, he tried to talk with Alexa. His speech still wasn't too good, but his manners were great, and he made sure to use the word please. Alexa apologized for not being able to understand what he was asking, but said she really appreciated how polite he was. I just thought it was the cutest thing, and it warmed my heart." Marta emailed, "I have a medically fragile child. Sometimes when I'm filling syringes, I notice I'm running low on something. I can ask Alexa to remind me to order meds later without having to stop what I'm doing. I also have used it to remind me when his line needs to be flushed, when nurses are coming, the dates of upcoming doctor's appointments, etc. It has been a lifesaver." Josh Sherman, I can imagine you've heard a number of stories from parents like this where this device turned out to be a real godsend.
We do hear a lot of great stories from customers, both trying to think of one off the top of my head, like as good as the ones you just shared. I can't.
Well, I mean, even just the please and thank you one. I mean, there's a mode on the Echo Dot that will encourage that, right?
We built polite mode when we introduced the Echo Dot Kids Edition, yes. And so that's a good example of us talking to child behavioral research and development experts, and hearing that positive reinforcement was the best way for us to approach this. Don't get punitive. And so if a child says please, then we will acknowledge that and then get along with answering their question or delivering their request. Absolutely.
I should note, Joshua McNichols, that on the other end of the spectrum, we heard from people who have used these devices with elders in their home. Alan tweeted, "Smart devices can also be used for elder care. We use Alexa to remind my father-in-law to take his meds and nudge him to drink more water during the summer, in addition to getting him to listen to podcasts, etc., to stay informed." Joshua?
Yeah, totally. And I think the same questions that we have about Alexa and kids, are these things bringing us together or are they pushing us apart? Are they, some of the questions that we heard were, could these devices start to replace some parental role in some way? That was one fear that some parents had. It's the same thing with elders. It's like on the one hand, Alexa and Echo devices can help empower people who, you know, we talked to one woman in episode 2 of the Primed podcast who was losing some of her vision, and she was able to, you know, call up a favorite piece of music using her Echo and listen to it over and over again. And that was something that gave her a sense of independence. But on the other hand, could we slip into a world where, because our parents are a little bit more independent, we're like writing them less or interacting with them less? It's always on a case-by-case basis. We need to be asking the question of, is this technology helping bring us together, or is it pushing us apart and letting us isolate ourselves like other technologies have done?
Professor Yip, based on your research, what do you see as the future of these smart speakers? I mean, in particular, this idea that kids are thinking through the role that smart speakers play in almost co-parenting them, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I think a lot of the research or the future of it will be what we call artificial intelligence literacy, really trying to think about, not just thinking about smart speakers as the device we're going to be looking at, but really actually looking at the entire ecosystem of things. And so the future of parenting is really going to be talking a lot about, like, what is artificial intelligence and how do these things work out? And how do we make sense of it? Because that's going to be one of the biggest areas that it touches on, and really thinking about that as part of the future. In terms of parenting, or in terms of, say, like, what is this questions, it's going to be about the sort of socialness of these devices, and at what point does it become our family? There was a study on, I guess, Jibo robots a while ago, and this robotic device, you know, acted very similar in some ways to smart speakers. It had a back end and front end that you could talk to. But at some point, you know, it had to end, you know, the device actually, it was done. And so do we talk about the sort of questions of like the death of a smart speaker, the inevitable end at some point, or like, you know, what are these kind of big questions we're going to have about these sort of relationships we have with technology? And that's part of the future. In some of our research, we also found that children also strangely felt that they could be replaced by a technological device, that they were like, maybe the parents are going to like this device more than me. And so it kind of goes vice versa as well. Like, what are the children's relationships with their parents based on this, on these smart speakers that are coming of age in this case?
Yeah, as soon as Alexa learns to eat its vegetables and do its homework, that might be a little bit more of a concern. Josh Sherman, before we let you... Oh, they did?
No, well, not that directly, but like, okay. maybe the parent will like me better, might like the device better because it will act better in that sense.
Oh, gotcha. Josh Sherman, before we go, what do you hope that this smart speaker technology goes from here? Is there anything that Alexa cannot do yet that you hope it will one day?
I just think it's day one. I don't even know what our customers will think of next and what we will think of next. I think we can make it more personable. I think we can make it more imaginative and fun for kids. I think we can always do a better job of answering questions and meeting them where they are. And I hope that they have a lot of fun with it, and then it also brings families together. I think that's an important thing, and we have a role to play in that.
Josh Sherman, the director of the Kid and Family Division at Amazon. Josh, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks.
Joshua McNichols of KUOW, a co-host of the podcast Primed. Joshua, thank you.
Hey, no problem.
And Jason Yip, an assistant professor at the University of Washington's Information School. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. Todd Zwillick will be with you for the Friday News Roundup, but until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks to WBHM in Birmingham for hosting us, and thank you for listening. This is 1A. Your face to face.